his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back, Hoosier fans, to Podcast on the Brink. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Remember that you can join me and my co-hosts, Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms, over at assemblycall.com/live immediately following every Indiana basketball game. We provide immediate reaction and analysis to the game, and we answer your questions. Also, make sure you're a member of the Inside the Hall Forum. You get the best ongoing IU hoops discussion on the web, plus tasty nuggets of info that Alex shares only in the forum. Go to forums.insidethehall.com. Well, since Indiana bowed out of last season's Big Ten tournament rather unceremoniously, the Hoosiers have played 7 basketball games, 5 of them in Canada and 2 recently in Bloomington. The Hoosiers went 6-1 in those games, with all of the wins coming by double digits. But of course, none of the games counted. So, do they matter? Well, yeah, I think they do, at least a little bit, especially for a young team with a lot of new parts trying to learn how to play together. But what have we learned about this team? The games start counting on Friday, so the Hoosiers had best be ready. Because while Mississippi Valley State likely won't provide too much of a test, at least we don't expect that they will, Texas Southern might, and SMU surely will. Will the Hoosiers be ready? Well, Tuesday afternoon, I hopped on the phone with Inside the Hall's Alex Bozich and the Indianapolis Stars' Zach Osterman to find out. Here's what they had to say. All right, Zach, Alex, welcome. How was it actually getting to cover games for a change this week, Zach?
Yeah, it was obviously it had been a weird week in Bloomington, certainly not maybe the wind up to the preseason that anybody had expected. But I was surprised, I guess, at the – I mean, I guess I expected a little bit less emotion or maybe a little bit more apathy or lack of investment from Indiana fans, not for any reason other than that, you know, it really did kind of feel like a very sobering start to the season with everything that happened, you know, both obviously with the suspensions and then obviously with Devin Davis. But certainly the first exhibition in particular was more well attended than I thought it would be. You know, the atmosphere was louder than I thought it would be. And just generally, I don't know, I guess I just thought Indiana fans would be less ready for basketball than they are. But I think, no, I was wrong.
Huh, I'm actually surprised to hear you say that, because it looked like from tweets and from pictures, I obviously wasn't there, but it looked like attendance was lower than what we usually get for the exhibition games. But you're saying the atmosphere was still pretty good?
I don't know how much lower it was. I mean, they reported the attendance numbers way high. They always do.
Yeah.
Those exhibitions, you know, outside of the Zeller halls, outside of 12-13, when they were number one in the country, those exhibitions are never that well attended. I mean, the truth is students are, you know, coming up on Thanksgiving, probably just finished dealing with midterms, not super interested in, you know, games that don't matter. And fans, if they know they've got a whole bunch of trips coming up, down from Fort Wayne, up from Evansville, down from Indianapolis, you know, they're not going to really push it to,
yeah,
you know, to get down to Bloomington for games that just don't matter. So I don't think there was not a hugely discernible difference, maybe a little bit less, but it was not sort of a glaring thing in terms of attendance being different, you know, like this year versus last year or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, the games didn't count, but, you know, they still played, and it was everybody's first chance who didn't go to Canada to see this new group of players actually get out there and play together. So I know we don't want to take, you know, or make too many or draw too many conclusions from exhibition games, but I feel like we can learn something. So let's start out with that. And Alex, I'll go to you first with this. What was the biggest positive and then the biggest negative that you took away from these 2 exhibition games?
You know, I was actually talking to Zach a little bit about this earlier. I think the biggest positive for me was how they responded to being down last night. They didn't really, and then they got down 11, and actually Zach and I sit right next to each other on the first row, and kind of looked at him at one point and was like, man, this team's not missing. And they weren't, Indiana defensively really wasn't engaged early. And they, you know, we were joking about the points per possession for University of Indianapolis early. And it was close to two because they were scoring pretty much every time down the court. And Indiana got down 11. And the thing I think that impressed me was that Robert Johnson and James Blackman, going back to Blackman's high school career, and then Robert Johnson, you know, I just saw him for the first time earlier this spring, but neither one of those guys seems to really get frazzled by anything, so that was impressive to see out of a freshman. As far as the area of concern, I think everyone probably has the same one at this point, is the rebounding. If you're going to let a Division II team come into your arena and grab almost 46% of the offensive rebounds, I think that's definitely got to be a concern. And at this point, with Devin Davis sidelined for, I would say, a considerable amount of time, if not the whole season, it's really gonna put a lot of pressure on any of the guards to rebound more. And Hunter Mosquera-Perea as well, who to this point has looked better, but he's obviously a pretty significant drop-off from having a guy like Noah Vonley down there that could pretty much clean up the defensive glass on his own. So I would say the positive is how they responded to the adversity, and the negative, obviously, at this point is the rebounding.
And Zach, what about you? What positives and negatives jumped out?
You know, I think if you look at both exhibitions together, I mean, maybe the dynamic nature of those two freshman guards. I mean, we knew they were good, and obviously I think everybody expected Blackman to come in and start scoring right away. I mean, he's got a really complete offensive game. He's added explosiveness in the last year, 2 years, you know, which lets him take defenders one-on-one, get to the basket. Obviously, you know, people saw him dunk last night. He's added that to the shooting ability. You never really thought that, or at least I don't think you should have thought, that he wouldn't step in and be able to score right away. But Johnson's a little more polished than I thought he was. And in general, they both look, and you know, Alex sort of talked about this, they both look very level-headed. We saw some of that in Canada, but, you know, it's kind of hard to tell when you're playing in some random gym and, you know, in Montreal in August, you know that no matter what happens, the game's really not going to have a huge impact on the season. You know, there's a long way to go between this and what's really meaningful. You're not playing in front of a really big crowd. You're certainly not playing in front of an Assembly Hall crowd. You know, these games were a test for me of those two and maybe their ability to perform when the lights were a little brighter. And again, obviously, as you said, you don't want to draw too many conclusions from an exhibition, but they looked really good and they looked really confident, not just individually, but kind of in the flow of Indiana's offense. They didn't have problems taking the ball from Yogi Ferrell and running the offense. They didn't have problems, you know, getting things started, sort of moving Indiana through the gears offensively. And that's something that they're both going to need to do at times this year, both to get their own points and to get points for their teammates. So I was impressed with maybe just how polished or comfortable those two looked. And then, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about negatives, Alex kind of hit on them, but I mean, this team is small, it's inexperienced. There are some pretty clear defensive issues. I think primarily just sort of one-on-one defensive issues. Again, you're playing young. You're playing some guys that maybe have a ways to go, including, you know, Blackman, if you want to, and he's talked about this as a weakness before, but if you want to talk about a weakness in James Blackman, that is certainly one right now. So I think it's a team that's just, and I said this on Twitter and somebody kind of got snarky with me, and I know what they meant, and I think they know what I meant. This is a team that's going to have to outscore people, and it sounds really simplistic, but it's a team that's going to give up a lot of points, and it's a team that's going to let opponents control. It's going to let opponents control portions of the game because I think it's still going to turn the ball over a fair amount. It's certainly going to give up a lot of rebounds at both ends of the floor. So it's going to have to be a team that leaves, you know, no margin for error in its shooting and its scoring, which is, I guess, to turn it back on its head, one of the reasons why one of the positives I'd point out was the guard play, and particularly the young guards in those first two games.
So, and kind of drawing on something you said there, does that pretty much mean that we are just in line for a very up and down season? Because you look, when you get into Big Ten play, the kinds of attributes that make a team consistent and that help you, you know, stay in games and win games on the road are defense and rebounding, the stuff that tends to be more consistent from game to game. Shooting can come and go some. So does that mean that this is just a team that when they shoot well, they've got a chance, and when they don't, you know, there's going to be some long, cold nights this winter?
I mean, I think to some extent, although at the same time, if you think about just how much Indiana's loaded up with shooting, I mean, consider Nick Zizelof just scores 24 points in his Assembly Hall debut against Northwood, and then scores 4 points last night, goes 0 of 6 from the field and 0 of 4 from behind the arc. But what happens? Rob Johnson steps up, knocks down a couple three-pointers. Callen Hartman steps up, knocks down a couple three-pointers. We haven't even seen Max Hotsal healthy yet. Neither of his exhibitions. He looked pretty good in Indiana's in Indiana's Hoosier Hysteria. I mean, both the three-point shooting contest, which, you know, only means so much, but still exists, and the scrimmage portion as well. So, yes, shooting comes and goes, but at a certain point, do you just have so many shooters on this team that somebody is going to have a hot hand almost every night? At the same time, for all the other reasons that we've already kind of touched on, I do think it's going to be that kind of year for Indiana because young teams do that. I looked this up last night. This is the sixth year in seven that a Tom Crean Indiana team has had as many or more freshmen and sophomores on its roster as it has juniors and seniors. And if my memory serves me looking up that stat, five of those 7 years, there were more freshmen and sophomores on the roster than there were juniors and seniors. So it's youth is kind of a consistent presence, obviously, for this program, but that's maybe why you see some of these issues pop up and certainly why you see some inconsistencies pop up in the 2 years, in the 5 years that weren't 2011 to 2013. I think that it is going to be an up and down year for Indiana. I think it's a year where Indiana's obviously got to put in some work and improve over the course of the season. You hope that Indiana against SMU is going to pale in comparison to Indiana at Maryland in February. But at the same time, I thought watching Indiana play UConn last year in the Garden that Indiana team would be much, much better by February, by March. And I know I was talking to national writers who said the same thing, and it just never happened. So if you're looking for just sort of a vague or general way this season's got to be different from last season, I do think that Indiana is going to have that up and down. And I do think that if you can eliminate that and by the end of the season kind of have some consistency to you or to your game and your performances, that's where maybe Indiana's got a chance to put together a season that's better than last year's.
Well, and Alex, I'll direct this at you, and then Zach will get your perspective on it too. You know, you talk about this is, you know, with young teams, you expect them to get better as the season goes along. You hope that anyway. And unfortunately, one of the trends that we've seen with this program is teams kind of petering out a little bit in February and really starting to struggle. Even the team with Zeller and Oladipo that went to the second Sweet 16 team was 4-4 down the stretch. Alex, is there anything to suggest, and obviously it's way early to make any type of prediction, but is there anything to suggest that this season can be different in that regard?
It's really tough to say because it's tough to kind of look at that as, this team is so different from last year's team and the teams before. That's kind of like the one thing I kind of come back to is Zach's point was, you know, the youth of this team. It's really hard to figure out on a year-to-year basis kind of what you're going to be looking at as far as improvement over the season. I felt like I think the biggest thing for this team is getting the three guys back next week and then kind of actually seeing all the pieces together and then moving forward from there. But I don't really have a good answer or a good sense of kind of how that's going to change just because there's so many new pieces. It's really hard for me to say.
Yeah, well, and to Zach's point, it's just it's kind of something that just has to happen for the season to be successful, and I suppose we will see that play out over the year if this year is different. But like you said, kind of tough to predict right now. Alex, I want to get back to something you said earlier. Kind of, you know, you're you know, that you liked how the guys responded to getting down early. You know, last year in the past, we've seen Indiana come out pretty well out of the gates and do very well in first halves and then struggle at the start of second halves. These first two exhibition games, the one trend we've seen is struggling in at the beginning of both halves. I mean, in last night's game, Indiana was down 28-20 at the under 8-minute timeout and then used that 22-0 run to take control of the game. Is there any reason that you see why they're struggling, or is this just kind of a young team kind of getting its feet underneath it, and you think that won't be a huge issue once the games start counting?
I think it's just a young team trying to find its bearings at this point. I mean, you've got a lot of new guys that have never played a game in Assembly Hall in front of that many people before. You have, well, at least last night, I thought you had an opponent that really came out and threw a really hard first punch, and Indiana didn't seem like they were ready for it at the beginning. So, you know, to me, the bigger takeaway is like what we talked about is kind of how they respond to the runs that the other team is inevitably going to make, because last year we saw so many times where they had built up a nice halftime lead only to kind of let it slip away right there in the second half. And I know it was only the University of Indianapolis, but last night I felt like even early in the second half, they made a little bit of a run, but Indiana was kind of able to hold them off and never really let control of the game go back to UND's side. So that was encouraging. But I don't think anything really stands out at this point as far as what's, you know, behind the full starts, at least at this point.
Well, and it brings us to something Zach talked about with shooting. It seemed to me a lot last year that Indiana would give up these big runs because they couldn't make a shot to stop it and because they would string together 3, 4, 5 turnovers in a row. So as we look at positives, you know, the improved shooting, the turnovers were much better in the first exhibition game than the second, but still overall there was improvement. So that should help in that regard, right, Zach? You know, not allowing so many big runs, actually having some shooters and some guys who can step up and make some shots to stop it.
I mean, in theory, certainly. And to kind of come back to Alex's point about the youth and the new guys, I mean, I think one of the big issues when you talk about positives or pros or strengths for this offense or for this team is that on paper, this team should be really good offensively. And what we've seen so far suggests that it will be. But we've also never seen a Larry Brown game plan, you know, put into effect against Indiana. We've never seen a Rick Pitino game plan put into effect against this group. There's a lot that should be that should be sort of assumable, I guess, about this group. But, you know, maybe we learned a little bit last year, too. You just can't until you see it work, until you see James Blackman score 20 points against SMU, until you see Yogi Ferrell, you know, upping his assist-to-turnover ratio back to about the 2-to-1 that he was in his freshman year from about the 1.5-to-1 that he was last year. So, I mean, I again, in theory, yes, I absolutely think so. And I think that it's a team that, just generally, as you said, maybe isn't going to have those runs and those moments because it's just going to be able to answer them. So it's not like, I mean, there's still going to be some turnovers and there's still going to be some defensive issues, but you're also just not going to have the same total number of empty possessions that Indiana struggled with last year. But, you know, when Bozich kind of talks about some of the questions about this team being hard to answer, I think that's wise, because what we've seen on paper, what we've seen with our eyes, suggests that he should be sort of, you know, that shooting, that scoring, ball movement, fluid, dynamic guard play, these should be things that Indiana is going to be able to count on this season. But because you are talking about a group that's, for the second straight year, got more newcomers on scholarship than it does returnees, you just can't assume those things until you see them put into practice, I guess.
Yeah. So, Zach, you talked about Robert Johnson and James Blackman Jr. as individuals who stood out for you during the two exhibition games. Did anybody else's play really stand out, either for better or worse?
Well, Hunter Perea, you know, I think he went for 10 and 12, and then I think 12 and 8. I don't have the stats in front of me. I
think it was 14 and 8 last night, I believe.
14 and 8 last night, and including a shot well from the free throw line last night. You know, I wrote this in something after the Northwood game. I said, you know, that was a good game for Mosquera Perea, but the key for him isn't really having one good game or even two. It's being able to do it consistently, because his problems have been as much inconsistency. We've seen flashes of his talent even as far back as his sophomore, his junior year of high school. The question has always just been, how do we get him to do this consistently? How do we instill that confidence and that poise in him that, you know, that when he tries to post up and somebody feeds him the ball, he doesn't try to hurry through everything, that he just catches, he dribbles, he makes a decision, he commits to it, and everything kind of goes smoothly. How do you get him to play under control? How do you get him to play just sort of slowly in his head, but at game speed on the court? He's looked good over these two games. He's also certainly not been challenged nearly as much as he will be, just like anybody else, obviously, once the regular season begins. So I think that is a positive. But it's also something where I just kind of need Hunter Perea to be averaging, you know, 8 and 7 or 9 and 7, you know, something like that every night over Indiana's first 10 games before I'm going to be willing to just come out and say, okay, he's figured it out. And there's the inside presence Indiana needed. You know, Hunter Perea finally came good. But early, I think that would probably be another one that I'd throw out there.
And Alex, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Nick Zeisloff's play from last night. You've been very high on him, and he was obviously great in the first exhibition game, but really struggled to find a shot, really just to kind of get in the flow of last night's game. Was there any reason that stood out to you for why?
Well, the one thing I noticed a little bit last night, and Crean kind of talked about Zeisloff needing to be more than just a shooter, but to me, his role on this team, it's not just a shooter, but it's a guy that just makes like the simple play and plays within his limits. And there was a few times last night where he put the ball on the floor in situations where he shouldn't have. It was a little bit obviously turnover prone last night, and that's exactly the opposite of what Indiana needs from him. So basically he needs to be a guy out there that's just solid all around. He doesn't need to do anything spectacular. He needs to move the ball. He needs to take care of the ball. He needs to shoot when he's open, but putting the ball on the floor is not really a strength of his, and I felt like last night he did that, tried to do a little bit too much, which, you know, it's an exhibition game, but I think more often than not, he's going to be a guy that's maybe not a double-digit scorer with any regularity, but I think, you know, he's definitely going to be a positive on most nights just because he's a veteran presence out there. I feel like one thing watching him on defense is he talks and communicates really well. Obviously not the best defender in terms of athleticism and the way he moves, but I think he's got value in that department. But this is a tough game for him last night. And obviously he's going to have ups and downs. It's not. I think he's going to be a valuable piece to this team, but just like anybody else, I mean, he's playing the second game in the center. He played well in the first game, and then he had a bad game last night. So I guess we'll see Friday kind of how he bounces back, which to me that's going to be one of the storylines I'm looking at. And kind of to on Zach's point on Hunter, I think he hit it right on the nail right on the head. They don't need him to be a dominant force by any means. They just need him to be consistent. And as encouraging as his play has been these first two games, it's still two exhibition games. So it's not really anything. I think I agree with Zach 100%. You know, let's look at his numbers about 10 games from now and see what he's done. The one encouraging thing I will say, the first two games, he's done a good job of not fouling. That's really something that he's going to have to keep in mind. He can't really, you know, Crean kind of let him play through the two fouls last night, but I think once the competition steps up a little bit, I don't know that he's going to be able to leave him in there with 15 minutes left in the first half with two fouls. So we'll see how that comes along too, because that's really one of the things that held him back, I feel like, in his first two seasons.
So there have been these terrifying moments in these first two games where Hunter's kind of hobbled around for a few seconds. Like last night, he was kind of limping just briefly. But it just makes you realize that we're basically right now one Hunter injury away from Tim Priller essentially starting at center. And you know, I started thinking about that, and I thought about how you know last year at this time, it was conceivable that our front line for this year would be Noah Vonleh, Luke Fisher, Hanna Mascara-Perea, and Devin Davis. And you know, I cried a little bit when I thought about that, because right now it's basically Hanna Mascara-Perea and Tim Priller, with you know Noah leaving and Luke transferring and the unfortunate injury to Devin Davis. And clearly Tom Creedon tried to scramble and address, you know, the Vonleh and Fisher departures in the offseason, you know, bring in Jeremiah April and Emmett Holt and Priller. I'm curious because a lot of people have been, you know, talking about this with, you know, how can you have a roster that's this imbalanced and, you know, kind of the back and forth from last year to this year. Zach will go to you with this first and then Alex. You know, is there anything more Tom Crean could have done given what he could control with what's transpired the last year to address our most glaring issue, which is obviously in the post?
I think that's tough to say. I mean, I think there's always probably more that somebody could have done. I mean, you know, if you just kind of follow maybe some of the same logic that you have when we approach, you know, the whole sort of Devin Davis and well, maybe not just that incident, but player behavior is a larger question. I mean, just in the sense that a coach is always kind of, the coach always has to understand that he's going to be held responsible for the failings and deficiencies of his program, regardless of how those come to pass. At the same time, I mean, I don't think I never would have expected Luke Fisher to transfer, at least certainly not mid-year. I don't think a lot of people really thought Vonleh would be good enough to leave, especially not last year, especially not in last year's class, because you had Wiggins, you had Parker, you had all these talented kids coming through. You know, I mean, I think, and I don't know, somebody correct me if they think I'm wrong, but I would have imagined that one or both of the Harrison twins would have been more likely to leave than Vonleh going back last year. And they're obviously still in college, and now he's in the NBA. You know, sometimes this stuff just kind of conspires against you. And you say it's a good problem to have, but it's, you know, it can really hurt, too. I don't know that you could just flat out say he clearly screwed this up or that up, or he could have done more here or there. I think any coach is always going to feel and be responsible for, you know, what happens to his program. At the same time, I mean, I'd point out that, you know, Peter Jurkin, because of injuries, never worked out. Is that the fault of Tom Crean and his coaching staff? Is that the fault of, you know, maybe some of the people that were handling Jurkin's career at the level before Indiana when he picked up these chronic injuries? I don't know. But I know that a coach is always going to have to answer, I guess. Maybe the best way to say it is just today. A coach is always going to have to answer the criticism, and rarely, especially in moments like this, are excuses really going to, you know, get him off.
Yeah. Alex, what do you think on that?
Well, I mean, a year ago, if we were having this conversation a year ago, we were looking at what Indiana was going to sign for 2014, we would have been saying, you know, they're getting James Blackman, they're getting Robert Johnson, they're getting Max Holtz. Well, they're really addressing their needs. You know, a year ago from now, we wouldn't have thought that there was a need in the front court, and that just shows you really how quickly circumstances can change. I mean, the Fisher thing, obviously, I don't know that there was anything that could have been done. The Vonleh thing, you can look at that one of two ways. You can say, it's disappointing for the program and for the fans that, you know, he's not around for another year. And you can also look at it and say, hey, here's a kid that came in the top 10 or 15 recruit and left number 9 in the draft. You know, that's obviously good for the program. So the whole thing to me, you know, with the spring signings and even Emmett Holt, as late as that, you can't even call that a spring signing. That was a fall signing the weekend before the semester started. But, you know, except for the really top kids that kind of wait till the spring to see what happens with NBA things and different programs, there's really not going to be a lot of guys that are available in the spring that are really going to help your program. So, you know, when Priller and April signed, I mean, I follow recruiting as close as anybody. I hadn't heard of either one of the guys. So there's some skepticism there, you know, as to, you know, wh- where, how are those guys going to help? But, I mean, I think it speaks to kind of the situation. Tom Crean knew he had to get something, and those were the two best guys he could get at the time. And then I think he realized as the summer went on and he was in Canada that this isn't going to cut it completely, and he went out and got Emmett Holt, who was a kid that was going to reclass to 2015, and his recruitment could have blown up a little bit, but he was, you know, mostly a mid-major guy. So there was obviously a concern to bring in help, but when you get to the spring, especially considering when Fisher did what he did, I mean, it'd be one thing if he would have never shown up, but a mid-year transfer is very difficult because just a month before the early signing period had ended, and then he's gone, you're kind of left, you're scrambling at that point to try to fill a spot, and you're not going to come up with a top 40 recruit at 6'11 and highly skilled to replace him. So, I think any coach or any person in any situation can always look back and say, I could have done something different, I could have done more, but the reality of the situation to me is it was a tough situation to kind of navigate through, and we haven't seen April, but obviously Priller at this point is not really a solution to anything this year, and we'll see what happens with Emmett Holt.
Well, we've been going here for about a half hour, and we have yet to, I think, even mention the name of Indiana's best player and leader, which is Yogi Ferrell. And so, curious, Zach, to get your thoughts on how Yogi has looked these first two games in the exhibition season. It seemed to me that he's kind of, you know, tried to pick his spots a little bit to assert himself some on the offensive end, but when he has, he's looked more comfortable, you know, being able to drive and create and have guys to dish out to, which clearly he didn't last year. You know, it's been said a lot in the offseason that this team is much more perfectly constructed for Yogi's strengths. What have you thought so far watching him in the two exhibition games?
Well, I think he's looked good enough. I think there have still been moments where, and I hesitate to call it hero ball, I guess, because it wasn't really hero ball last year so much. It was just kind of like, how's Indiana going to survive if Yogi Ferrell doesn't play this way, if Yogi Ferrell isn't constantly hunting his own offense? But, you know, there have been moments where it still sort of feels like it's almost like just in that instant, his brain kind of flicks on and he thinks, you know, holy crap, I gotta go find a shot. There are just some times where he forces something, or maybe where he passes up a shot that suggests to me that he's still kind of adjusting to this team. And still, you know, even after Canada and the exhibitions and everything, still kind of figuring out, you know, 100% what he's got here. But I think that there have also been moments. I mean, he spent a lot of Monday night sort of giving way, I guess you'd say, to James Blackman and Rob Johnson, who both got a lot of opportunity to run the point and essentially sort of direct Indiana as a team. And that's important, obviously, from a personnel standpoint. You need those guys comfortable initiating the offense. You need them comfortable kind of deputizing for Yogi, if you will. But it also speaks maybe to a level of trust that I don't know that he would have put in a lot of his teammates last year, particularly in that guard rotation, just because Indiana struggled so much to put anything around him, or at least to just sort of space the floor. I asked him once in Canada if he felt like he could breathe again, and he laughed at me. Mm-hmm. But I think the laugh was kind of a laugh of agreement in a way. You know, and then he did agree with me. There were so many moments where they just couldn't do that for him last year. So I think it's natural that he's not just going to sort of fit like a glove back into the role that he was in 2 years ago, when he was very much a facilitator and very much, you know, kind of coming into Indiana to create for others and cognizant of that. That role and what that role would entail for him. And I think it's also fair to point out that really he's kind of having to make up a third role in three seasons, because he's having to strike actually a balance between those two sort of sets of responsibilities, creating for others, facilitating others, but then also saying, well, Yogi, you were still a 17-point-a-game scorer last year. You were a first team
all Big Ten pick in the preseason. We don't want you to just stop shooting the ball. We don't want you to stop trying to score. So he's kind of finding something, that, you know, a happy medium that he's never had to find before. And I think he's looked good enough so far. I think he's, again, I think he's still got some improvements to make, but I do think he's looked better.
Alex, the conventional wisdom really is that Yogi, Troy, James Blackmon, and Hahner pretty much have four of the starting spots locked down. I mean, disagree if you don't think that's the case. But, you know, when the SMU game comes and we get the full complement of guys back, who do you see as being that guy that steps into the fifth starter role? Do you see it as Zeisloff? Do you see Robert Johnson getting that call? Who do you think will be that fifth starter? And even more importantly, when it gets down to crunch time, who do you think will be that fifth guy that, you know, kind of plays in Indiana's most important minutes?
It's going to be tough. Based on what I've seen so far, I'd say Robert Johnson's probably got to get the nod, just based on consistency, the fact that he rebounded really well. And I think I've kind of said all along that I feel like Stanford Robinson might be best suited on this team as kind of a sixth, seventh man coming off the bench, providing a spark, much as like he did for part of the season last year. It's as far as the end-of-game situations, I think it's going to be a lot situational basketball depending on the matchups, but I can't really envision any scenarios where you wouldn't want to have Hahner and Troy out there, because those are probably going to be your two best rebounders. And then as far as the guards go, it's going to be a combination of who's rebounding the best, who's guarding the best, and kind of who's making shots on a particular night. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that, you know, at the end of games you could see, for defensive purposes, if you could see Robert Johnson standing Yogi out there with Zeisloff and Blackmon on the bench, depending on the situation. So, I would agree with you that those four spots feel like they're pretty locked out. I don't know if that would be the case for SMU, because I don't know if Green's just going to let those guys come back from the suspension and say, hey, here's your starting spot, you got it back. So we'll see how that goes with Troy Williams. But I would agree that those are the four. And then I think the fifth, to me right now, is Robert Johnson. And I'd probably say he deserves to finish games at this point, too, based on what I've seen.
Yeah, Zach, do you have any sense on that? We were talking about that on the post-game show last night, whether Troy will just be inserted right back into the lineup. I mean, obviously, when he comes back, that's a big game against SMU. Do you think he goes right back in the lineup, or is there going to be some time where he's got to earn it back?
I mean, I really don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I think some of that maybe depends on how Johnson and Zeisloff play. Do either or both of them, you know, really... do either or both of them really sort of make a case for saying you can't just give my starting spot away? I mean, not to be crass or blunt, but if Nick Zeisloff repeats the 0-for-6 performance, you know, in Indiana's first two games, then yeah, maybe you do consider bringing Troy Williams back in. At the same time, I can also understand the idea, the value of saying, no, you're not going to, you know, you were suspended, you've done nothing to earn this starting spot yet, so you're not going to take it from somebody who's been playing in these games. I do think being a starter is not overrated, but what the starting lineup is in one particular game can be overrated. You know, if SMU goes on a 7-0 run, you know, to start the game, does Tom Crean not point at Troy Williams and yank him off the bench 2 minutes in? And then at that point, have you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish by saying, you know, you are not starting this game because of XYZ? Or have you really just kind of reinforced that, you know, that no matter what happens, Troy is just that important to Indiana that you'll reach to him when you need him, as soon as you need him? So that was kind of a long-winded answer. I really don't know what the right answer is. I think that's something that's got to be on feel for Tom Crean. And because the reality is that one of the number one things you can take away from a kid, and this is applied for years and years, it might apply a little bit more so now, just kind of in the current climate of basketball as, you know, the only sport. Kevin Wilson talked about this once with football. He said one of the things that he thinks, you know, drives kids to transfer now is that you don't see kids play multiple sports. They spend all their time specializing in one sport. So if they don't play within the first year or two,
then they feel like, why have I put so much time into this, and why am I putting so much time into this if it's not going to pay off? So I think there's something to that, that that playing time is something that's more valuable to pull away from a player than it used to be, or at least maybe just a little bit. So if that's kind of your major currency, then yeah, maybe you do use that to send one final statement to say, you're not going to let your team down like that. And then as soon as your suspension's up, you're just going to go back and grab the starting spot that, that you gave up essentially when you made this mistake. But I think that's down to, you know, how Tom Crean, his handle on his team, and whether he feels that'll be impactful or whether he feels that would be a message that would be wasted or somehow detrimental down the line. I know that's a total cop-out answer. I apologize.
No, it's good. Have you gotten any kind of sense for how Troy, Stan, and Emmett have responded to the suspension? I know they haven't been on the bench. They've been in the locker room, I guess, charting the plays. And I know at least the first exhibition game, they were given a chance to speak to the guys at halftime. Have you gotten a sense for how they're responding? Is it humbled them? Is it, you know, kind of made them reprioritize? What are you kind of hearing, if anything, about that?
Not much, to be honest. And I mean, I think it's probably important to recognize that in Stan and Troy's case, I don't know if they knew the specific punishment or when they knew the specific punishment, but they knew one was coming for a while because these drug tests were an issue from the off season, from the summer. So, yeah. You know, if anything, I would wonder if the more impactful moment is obviously having to see a teammate in the hospital. And obviously that's the product of an accident, first and foremost. It really is. I don't think it's unfair for anybody to say that could have happened to anybody. Mm-hmm. And from what we know of Emmett Holt's, you know, blood alcohol level at the time, it certainly appears like he was being responsible enough to be sober, to be able to drive his friends around, even if he'd been drinking underage. But at this, you know, when you factor that into the larger conversation about player behavior, I would wonder if that is going to be the more profound or impactful moment for these kids, to say, do you see what, you know, do you not see just the impact of all this and how you're getting in trouble? And do you not understand that you've got to hold each other accountable and everybody has got to be a part of that? So I haven't really gotten a sense of how they've responded to the suspensions. I mean, we heard, when people talked about what those guys talked about in the locker room during the Northwood game, during halftime of the Northwood game, it was all very sort of like coaching speak stuff. It was, you know, try this guy on his left hand, or you need to drive the ball more, we need to force the ball in the paint, that kind of stuff. It wasn't sort of inspirational or larger messages. It was, at least what we were told by their teammates, was it was stuff that was sort of specific things that they were picking out, adjustments that they would make, technical talk, I guess. Mm-hmm. Not so much the bigger picture.
All right, well, before we wrap up here, I do want to ask each of you one final question. Before we get to that, Alex, I'd love to get some quick insight, you know, with signing day coming up, just some quick insight on the two guys Indiana's expected to sign, which is Juwan Morgan and OG Anunoby. Hope I pronounced his name right. what can you tell us about those guys?
Well, Juwan Morgan, obviously, is the, if you want to call him the prize of the duo at this point, I think that'd be appropriate. I mean, he's a 6'8" kid that is pretty skinny at this point, but has a lot of tools as far as rebounding and scoring around the basket. He was the most improved player on the Nike EYBL circuit, which is pretty much the premier AAU league in the country. So he's a player that most people believe has a pretty good amount of upside and is a guy that will obviously be able to help the front line. OG, a little bit different player. He's, I think, similar in size, maybe an inch smaller, but more of an inside-out type of guy, athletic, kind of under the radar. Didn't really play with a big AAU program, I don't think, until this year on the Under Armour circuit, where he kind of broke out a little bit. I think Indiana saw him when they were scouting another player and kind of took interest in him at that point. And his recruitment kind of got interesting at the end in that some bigger schools were starting to come in, but Indiana was able to, you know, get in somewhat early, I guess if you want to call July early, but really when schools first started to see him and get interested. But he's another guy that you hear a lot of of the national guys say that his best basketball is ahead of him, and an upside guy that could, you know, I've read some comparisons to maybe like a Will Sheehy, as far as like being not the same type of player, but, you know, being maybe a little bit overlooked nationally. So both of those guys obviously are going to provide some help in the front court. I think OG is more of a 3-4, and Morgan's probably more of a 4. But both are expected to sign. The signing period starts tomorrow and runs through the 19th. Somewhere within that period, I think Morgan told us he was going to sign later in the period. I'm not sure on OG as far as a firm date, but as far as I know, both of those guys will be signing coming up here in the next week.
Yeah, and as you kind of alluded to, just remember that the last time Indiana had a somewhat unheralded or, you know, relatively unheralded two-man recruiting class, it ended up working out pretty well with Victor and Will. So, you know, I know just from reading the comments that Juwan Morgan makes, I think a lot of IU fans are getting excited about him. He's, you know, one of those guys who seems to say all the right things. Obviously, we'll find out if he does them as well. But two guys, I think, that have a lot of upside to get excited about. Okay, to wrap up here, you know, again, they're exhibition games. You know, now we've seen Indiana play 7 times. None of the games have counted. You know, so what do we really know? I don't know. But my question to you guys is this, because I think, you know, with exhibition games, really good IU teams always seem to win their exhibition games by 30, 40, 50 points. They're not really in doubt in the second half, and they're kind of a breeze. These two games were a little bit tougher, which is, you know, to be expected with the shortened rotation and just some of the challenges Indiana's been dealing with. So let me just get your final thoughts in this way. Zach, go to you first and then to Alex. Are you feeling better or worse about Indiana's chances this season after these two exhibition games? Just your gut feel after watching them. Are you feeling better than you were before the games, or worse?
I would say worse, but not necessarily because of the games. I mean, I think it's more because, you know, when we saw them in Canada, I certainly was surprised, thought they were better than they played better than I thought they would, and they looked better than I thought they were. But I just don't think you can discount kind of what's gone on in the last couple of weeks here. I mean, number one, obviously, you have lost your number one bench forward, almost undoubtedly your number one bench forward, Devin Davis. Nobody really knows when he'll return. Nobody, it's not something anybody's talking about for obvious reasons. You know, will it even happen this season? Again, nobody's really talking about it, and you wouldn't expect anybody to be, because there's more important things to worry about right now. But there's also just a greater level of distraction around this team. I mean, what, you know, I was asked to write essentially sort of in the aftermath of, I think it was the Tuesday after the suspensions were announced, what does this mean for Indiana on the court this year? And I said that the biggest issue of all is, how do you block out the distractions? Because it's, people are going to be mad about it. You're going to hear fan frustration about it. You're also going to hear it from opposing fans. This is a young team, and like it or not, you're going to hear it from, you know, the Izone, and from students at the, well, not just students, but you're going to hear it from fans in Columbus and fans in Madison. You're going to hear people chant things that are hurtful and mean. That's unfortunately just part of it. I've heard plenty of it come out of, you know, come out of Indiana fans' mouths over the years. I feel slightly worse about this team, but not because of the exhibition so much as I wrote today that I think we've pretty much learned all the basics we need to by now about this team. But until I see it handle just kind of the continually swirling, just sort of, you know, storm of distractions that seem to be sort of settling around Cook Hall right now, and it's lulled a little bit, but I mean, it was kind of at DEFCON 2 a week ago, so it kind of had to just sort of, you know, the pressure had to release a little bit. But I would still say that I don't see how that doesn't impact this season, and until I see Indiana able to just kind of move past some of that, I can't guarantee that this season is going to go the way that fans and certainly those within the program would hope.
And Alex, last word over to you. Better or worse after these two exhibition games?
Maybe slightly worse. I agree with Zach. You just don't know how the youth of this team is going to respond to what has been just a weird situation overall for a lot of reasons. I mean, you have a teammate getting hurt, you have a coach being criticized, you have turmoil, I guess, with some off-court issues that, you know, that they've known about for a while, but when things become public, then it changes things. And to me it's going to be interesting to see how this team responds to a couple of losses, because, you know, I think they're going to, the non-conference schedule is, you know, it's got seven or eight games that are, they should win as long as they come out and don't lay a complete egg. But then there's four or five other games that really are going to kind of set the tone going into Big Ten. And if they want to have a chance to reach the goal that they have, which I think is returning to the NCAA tournament, they're going to have to win, I think, three of those five tough games to even set themselves up to have a chance to get there. So we'll kind of see once they get into kind of the meat here of the non-conference schedule. Games like SMU, Pitt, Louisville, I think are going to tell us a lot. But I think there's one of two ways this can go. They can kind of pull things together and rally around each other, or when things get tough, they could kind of fracture apart and it could spiral downhill quickly. So it's really impossible to say at this point. I just think that – I think Zach's right. I think it's a lot to deal with, especially for young people. I'm not saying that they can't rebound from it. I'm not saying they won't rebound from it. I'm just saying that it's made the situation a little bit more difficult just kind of going into the season. And you can say, you know, and I thought about this too, you know, it, all that stuff kind of goes away once you step on the court. But it's kind of there too, just in the atmosphere of Assembly Hall. I mean, you know, we'll see how the crowds are the first couple of games, but it'll be interesting to kind of see if the atmosphere and the electricity of the building that we've seen the past couple of years is still there. There's a lot of just a lot of uncertainty, I feel like, at this point. And winning can cure a lot of things, but if they drop a couple of games that they feel like they should win, I'll just be interested to see kind of what the response is and if they can recover from that, or if things kind of take a turn for the worse.
Yeah. Well, definitely far more questions than answers right now, but we will start getting answers to those questions Friday night when Indiana takes on Mississippi Valley State. And then Monday, I believe, when Mike Davis brings his Texas Southern team into Assembly Hall, we'll start getting some of those answers. So, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, thank you for being here. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, thank you. And as a final thought, real quick, speaking of recruiting, Zach, I did just want to commend you on a great job on the article about the 89 recruiting class. Really enjoyed reading that. So if you haven't read that yet, make sure to I'm sure you can find it in Zach's Twitter stream or over at IndyStar.com. But really, really nice job on that piece. I really enjoyed it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I think it was fun to put together.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet we could have had an entire episode just talking about that recruiting class. I think for a lot of Indiana fans, that class holds a lot of great memories. So, all right, guys. Well, we will we'll see you on Friday at Assembly Hall. Hopefully Indiana can kick off the season with a nice victory and get to 1-0. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. If you enjoyed it, please consider giving the show a rating or a review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. And you can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Assembly Call. You can follow Alex at Inside the Hall and Zach at Zach Osterman. And again, be sure to join me, Ryan, and Andy after every game over at assemblycall.com/live for the post-game show. And go to forums.insidethehall.com to become a premium member of the Inside the Hall forum for the best IU discussion on the web. All right, everybody. Friday night, the games start counting for real. Indiana takes on Mississippi Valley State. We will see how the Hoosiers do in that one. All right, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.